hello, Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you as per usual. You're smirking. Why are you smirking?
I always like the way you find a way to start the show, because I think you're saying, how do I start this show? What do I say? Should I try to be different? Should I say the same things? You know, what is it? Teeny boppers and blue jeans, or what is that?
Teeny beans and blue jeans.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's either that, you know. So, I always enjoy the way you... It's like starting a lawnmower, you know.
Lawnmower.
Yeah, just, you know, because it's going to start. We have to figure out how hard you have to pull it, you know. So I just bought it.
Well, with you, I got to pull it like hell. I need two or three muscled guys to help me pull it.
Well, that's not fair, Bob.
So we're going to talk baseball. Gibby's going to join us. John Gibbons, a former manager of the Blue Jays, and we'll be interested to see what he has to say about, now the American League Championship Series is set. Atlanta is in, and Dodgers and Giants will go to a deciding game five tonight after the Dodgers got lots of hitting last night.
Boy, did they ever. I mean,
they could have scored 15.
And I tell you what, Bueller was good too. Boy, was he good early. He did
3 days rest and his arm didn't fall off. How about that?
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Are we going to hear that today?
Well, you know, I don't get many opportunities to point a finger at it and say, see, you know.
Yeah, I know, but he was.
Now, he only threw 71 pitches, but, you know, made it into the fifth and could have stayed there longer, obviously. But
they have good middle relief. They have good middle relief. And they were, tell you what, If somebody started watching that series not knowing that the Giants were 108 wins and the Dodgers were 106 or whatever the number was.
107, 106.
Okay. I'd tell you after four games, I like the Dodgers more. I really do.
Well, I mean, that's not, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's shocking to anybody, John.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the Dodgers have been a championship or championship contender for as long as we can remember, really. And the Giants have returned to that status and they're very good. Mm-hmm. But, we will see what happens. I mean, I think the Dodgers should win, but it games in San Francisco and anything is possible.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that with Gibby. The NHL season kicked off last night and I heard a few prognosticators who were, as usual with hockey pucks, 100% wrong. 100% wrong.
About?
Well, the two games that we saw, everybody thought Tampa Bay would cruise over Pittsburgh because the Penguins' top two players are out. Although I heard a stat somewhere.
Maybe top three, Bob, when you think Jake Guentzel is not playing.
Well, I guess you could make that argument. Yeah.
Sure.
But Tampa gets blown out by Pittsburgh. And I did hear a stat, and I can't profess to know that it was accurate, but...
But you're going to give it anyway?
Yeah. Well, because I think you might know the answer to this.
Okay.
Or know the right answer. The Penguins without Malkin and Crosby have won like 35 games and lost 15. In scenarios where the two of them were out.
Yeah.
Does that sound reasonable to you? Or you don't have any idea?
I've heard the number. I don't know exactly the number, but I know that they have a winning percentage. Yeah.
High winning percentage.
That was the first time since 2003 that they didn't have either Malkin or Crosby in their lineup on opening night.
In any event, they blew Tampa away, which means nothing, really, in the long term.
Nope. Well, and then the score, Pittsburgh scored three empty net goals, too. So it wasn't the blowout. But I mean, Pittsburgh was better at every aspect of the game. Tristan Jarry, who was supposed to be the biggest question mark in the Penguins lineup in goal, was solid. Their defense was solid. They were faster than Tampa. And here's the thing, Bob, and you would have a feel for this. how much of a hangover do you have if you win the Stanley Cup? You play more games than anybody else over a couple of year period.
Oh yeah.
It's, you know, it's taxing. It's taxing on you to play those extra games. And I wonder at what point does it play take a toll on Tampa. The other great story was Brian Boyle, 38 years old, didn't play last year, couldn't get a contract. Gets a contract after playing for the Americans at the World Hockey Championships, signs his contract yesterday morning, scores for Pittsburgh. It's a cool story. It really is. It makes you feel warm inside when stories like that happen in the game.
Well, if you're in Pittsburgh or Tampa, don't make too much of it, but nonetheless, it did happen.
What about Vegas?
Well, Vegas was another story. Vegas was clearly the better team in the early going. They built a 3-0 lead, and I don't know whether they went into cruise control or what they did, but the Kraken came back and tied it up before Vegas got the winning goal to prevail 4-3, but didn't cover the 1.5 puck line. Mm-hmm. And again, the experts that I heard of yesterday all love Vegas to blow out the Kraken. And to be honest with you, I probably would have liked that one too. So in any event, two, for different reasons, interesting opening nights. And a bunch more tonight, including
Maple Leafs. Yes,
the Toronto Maple Leafs will play the Montreal Canadiens. Do you have an anticipation of how that will go?
One team will win.
Thank you. Always succinct and to the point. With no opinion whatsoever.
But you know what? With anything. Montreal and Toronto, and Montreal having won a series that they shouldn't have won, who the heck knows?
Well, I get it. Montreal will play without their number one goaltender. The Maple Leafs will play without their number one and maybe number two forwards.
Yeah. No Weber for Montreal as well, Bob. No Shea Weber for the whole season. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, are we going to say that? Yeah, I was going to say, are we going to say that every game? You know, because he ain't going to play at all this year.
This is the only night you can say it.
And I think there's a realistic expectation we may never see him again.
I think that's fair.
Right?
I think that's fair. Yep. Yeah,
Announced his retirement, to the best of my knowledge, but it wouldn't shock me in any way, shape, or form if he did.
No, he's never announcing his retirement, Bob. The moment you announce your retirement, you stop getting paid. And Shea Weber has a contract that it lasts much longer than yours or mine.
Well, we don't have a contract at all.
Wait, what?
We don't have a contract at all. And I have never announced my retirement. My retirement has been announced for me by others.
You know, there's something with broadcasters, because my friend, our friend Bob Cole says the R word. I don't want to use the R word.
Oh.
Our pal Houston last week, remember?
Yeah, said the same thing.
I haven't really retired. And now you.
Well, as evidenced by the fact that I've been here doing this nonsense with you for a year. Or nearly a year, however long it's been.
No, it's a year.
Well, we haven't done 260 shows, though. That's a year, you know? I guess because we were doing three a week for a while.
We've been doing this for over a year. I think it was late September, so I know.
Holy cow. Maybe it's time to retire.
Come on, don't say that. Let's get
anyway. Let's enough of this babble here. Let's bring in our pal Gibby and see what he thinks of not only the two playoff series to come, the three teams that have made it, the two that are still battling it out, and we'll talk a little bit about the Blue Jays and get his take on some of the things we've discussed in terms of how you move forward with this franchise. John Gibbons, when we come back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you. A very simple and basic reopening there for you, John. No comment needed. And look what the cat dragged in. The former manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, John Gibbons, is with us from Texas with his cowboy paintings in the background there. Gibby, you look beautiful. How are you?
Man, Bob, we're doing great, man. It's good to see you again, too. You are, too, by the way. You got them shades on, man. Is it sunny in that room down there?
Shut up, Gibby. None of your damn business. I assume you watched the baseball game last night, but I shouldn't assume that because sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. So did you watch the Dodgers and Giants?
Yes. Yeah. I watched both of them. I watched, you know, the part of my employer, the Bravos, and then watched some at the end. Yeah.
Well, is there any way to get a feel for that Dodgers-San Francisco series? Dodgers have scored bunches of runs, bunches of hits in two games and haven't been able to scratch out anything in the other two. What do you take from that? Anything?
Yeah, well, you know, Bob, you know, it's kind of like, it's like playoff baseball. I mean, everybody talks about you got to have pitching to win, the great pitching wins. And that's kind of what's taking place, you know, in a lot of those series. You know, even look at Webb the first night against the Dodgers. And that's a big challenge that the Dodgers have. He'll be pitching for the Giants again. Of course, Scherzer's down, going with their young left-hander. But really, I think it's just the pitching's been so good. I was watching even to the other series, the Braves series. I don't think Milwaukee's a real high-powered offense necessarily. But the Braves pitch really, really good, you know. And then, of course, the big star showed up, you know, Freddie Freeman. Canadian boy, isn't he? I think.
Absolutely.
Yes, he is.
Or did I have to bring that up?
Braves don't surprise you too much. I mean, experience, I think, played a little bit of a factor in this, don't you think?
The Braves one?
Yeah, the Braves series.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and they got a good team. You know, Alex did his thing, you know, over the winter or over the summer when, you know, when things weren't going well and he had some big injuries. He went out and, that's what he's so good at. You know, he identifying what he needs to do. I made the comment, but the hardest thing he did was get out of that American League East. You know, I don't care what anybody said. You look at what two teams or four teams, 90 wins in that East. And so it seems to be a different animal, you know, the different parts of the different divisions and things like that. But the Braves have they got a good team. You know, they pitch, they got some good hitters. And, you know, but it's typical Alex, you know, identifying what he needs and doing it.
Who deserves credit for Jock Peterson, though, John? That's a guy this guy, it's now Jocktober, right?
Yeah, you know, some guys just step up, you know. You have to get the opportunities, obviously, to do it. And, he just rises to the occasion. He's one of those guys. And who's the other guy playing for Boston now? Kiki Hernandez, right?
Yeah.
You know, spent those years out there with the Dodgers playing really well. And then he's the hero over there in Boston. And it's like, some guys got that knack, you know, it's pretty, and then some guys wilt for whatever reason, you know, some guys are your regular season superstars, maybe because all the added pressure that's thrown on them in playoff time and a lesser guy, you know, when somebody doesn't expect much, you know, they do it.
Well, I tell you what, you know, Justin Turner and for the Dodgers, and look what Evan Longoria, who did not have a very good regular season, all he does is hit key balls at tee times in playoffs. But that it's those nerves of steel that you find guys when you're on the bench and you see guys like that. Do you just know that it's going to happen for them?
Yeah, you never really know for sure, but you got to. Pretty darn good feeling, you know. You watch them; they seem very relaxed, or they're confident. And it's just kind of the human element in the game. You know, that's one thing that analytics can't measure. You know, is the what's going on inside somebody's head or their heart rate, things like that. It's not always numbers.
We have seen, especially in the National League series, just a ton of pinch hitters. Over and over and over again. I mean, these teams are using their benches a lot more than traditionally they would have. Does that notion appeal to you? Is this something that you would do?
Well, you know, Bob, I was watching the games. I haven't locked in on them and like haven't missed an inning or a pitch or anything like that. But the way I kind of sum it up is it's the game is so different now. I mean, they'll go through those pitching staffs like, and I don't like that. You know, it's like in it, even in the game yesterday, you know, the Braves game that you know, the starter for Milwaukee's going and Milwaukee's finally scoring some runs. I mean, now that the pitcher got a hit, and it was first and third one out, he lays down a sack bunt, whatever. And then they don't score any more runs. And, Jeff Francoeur made the comment, well, you know, they use the bullpen so much, you know, that the manager's got to get X number of innings out of the starter, or because, you know, everybody's on fumes anyway, right? Well, that's because maybe, you know, the game before where it's not an elimination game, they yanked the guy early for whatever reason. And that was maybe yesterday's perfect opportunity, you know, to pinch hit there and maybe open that game up a little bit. So you know, it's almost like, you know, guys can't wait to yank these pitchers and go to somebody else. Or it's almost like they're afraid not to because they're going to get so scrutinized and they leave them in there too long. And that's just kind of the, you know, my feeling. But, you know, it takes its toll on that bullpen. And usually those guys are, you know, worn out from the beginning of the year anyway. So, but you know what, it's all, you know, if you end up winning and you do that a lot, and, you know, everything's overlooked, you know, but you know, when you're on the losing end of it, you know, you get scrutinized a little harder.
Well, we talked about this off the top, and I know John's going to chastise me for bringing it up again, but.
Let me guess. Bueller on 3 days.
You know, and he only threw 71 pitches. He made it into the fifth before they yanked him. I get that. But he said after the game, he felt really strong. Now, who knows? You know, pitchers say that kind of crap all the time. But, you know, maybe somebody wakes up and says, you know what? This whole idea of you can't throw over 100 pitches, you can't pitch on 3 days rest is a bunch of nonsense. And I think you agree, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. And, you know, I mean, the circumstances, you know, dictate otherwise. You know, I mean, this is, you got the, you know, you got, they got a chance to repeat, you know, as world champs, those kind of things. And, yeah. And you know, it's, I think when a pitcher's hurting or hanging or something's bothering, they're going to let you know, you know. Yeah. If not, and how many guys actually get hurt and you push them too far? You know, that's usually something that takes its toll over time with those guys before they end up going down. It's not like it's, I wouldn't think, you know, it's one outing, right? And you know, you go back, look at, you know, one of my favorites, and I know one of your guys' favorites, look at Jack Morris, you know, then going to that World Series, you know, Minnesota and Atlanta years ago. And it would be unheard of to even take those guys out, you know, and you know, then they're already on 200 plus innings to begin with.
Right.
So it becomes a mentality, you know, and then a lot of times now these guys are geared and groomed for, you know, they get yanked so early, you know, they don't know any different, I guess, you know, but it, you know, the great ones don't want to come out, you know, you got to fight them on that, but that's the trend of baseball now.
Yeah. Hey, well, as remember, as a man, go ahead, John. Sorry.
No. Just so as a manager, John, the guy gets ticked off if you take him out. But on the days before a start or a potential start, would they lobby you? Would they come to you and say, "Hey, listen, don't give me an extra day, or I'm ready to go on three"? Would they come and communicate that with you?
Well, you know, that's usually only going to happen during the postseason, or maybe a big game down the stretch or something like that. And it's usually, yeah, it's not one of those things where, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but if it's going to happen, you know, it's on our mind too. It's on the coaching staff's mind, the front office, because, you know, you need this guy. And, you know, if you wait for them to come to you, you know, it might not happen. It's kind of a, you know, it's just kind of a natural thing that happens. You know what? We need this guy. He knows it. You know what? Not only that, we're paying him a lot of damn money. You know, does that ever come into consideration? As a team, you're trying to win the ultimate goal. So it's usually, you know, I mean, everybody kind of thinks along the same way, you know, and it's just, the game is so different. You know, you're watching it, you go, you know, here comes this guy. Next thing you know, walks a couple guy, gets in trouble. And I get it, you know, if a pitcher's laboring, he just doesn't have it. Yeah, get him out of there. I get it. But if, you know, if a guy's going along pretty good because in the end, you end up costing, you know, those boys down the bullpen, that's for damn sure.
So when you're sitting in the dugout and you're, I mean, it doesn't have to be a postseason game. Well, let me ask you this: do you manage differently in the postseason than you do during the regular season? I guess a little bit, huh?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, because the games mean so much. Now, if it's let's say it's a non-elimination game, you know, you got to be smart too. You know, you got to, if it's a, you know, maybe it's a game getting out of hand a little bit early. But if you know, if you can't get, you know, 4 or 5 innings out of your starter, you know, you're probably going to be in tough shape anyway. And I know teams are built, you know, some of the teams you're playing still right now, the bullpens are so good, But sooner or later, I think that catches up with you. You know, I mean, if you make it to the World Series, you know, three extra rounds. Maybe it's because I've just known the game one way for so long. But I sit there and watch that, and I kind of cringe, you know.
So one of the things that we have seen a lot with this this Giants-Dodgers series is the use of the bench, of course. And San Francisco, I think, has used their entire bench. And generally speaking, in my mind at least, if you've got a left-handed pitcher coming in and you've got a left-handed hitter at the plate, maybe you pinch hit and go with a righty against lefty, or the other way around. But I'm not sure there are many other scenarios where you would make that change. But they don't seem to care. They're using their benches like to the max. Does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. So it's almost like you're doing things just to do things, so you don't get crucified or questioned on I got these guys at my disposal, I have to use them. It's like when you're coaching the big leagues, right? Just because your title's a coach doesn't mean you always have to coach. You know, sometimes you got to turn them loose and let them, right? I mean, that's. And it so maybe you don't always have to use those guys. But you know what I can only speak for myself. But what I would kind of base, of course, we didn't play a lot of National League games, but I've done enough of them. The situation, the time of the game, maybe the situation, the magnitude of the game. Maybe you have that pitcher that is leading off an inning. You may be down a run or two, but if it's early enough in the game, you may need that pitcher to extend this game out. So maybe you let him hit instead of going to one of your pinch hitters. It's tough to get hits anyway. Maybe you sacrifice it out, but you save that hitter or something for a time when maybe there's a couple guys on base, or it's later in the game where it's really crunchy. Because you can't sacrifice every guy you got in the bullpen either now, So
one of the things that's going to happen, we think, is the DH probably will disappear in the National League. You like that idea? Or the DH will be
right.
The DH will be implemented in the National League full time.
Yeah, I do. Spend my major league career as a manager in the American League. I get used to that. I kind of like that. I kind of like hitters. Reason I say that, if you're going to do interleague play and things like that, your guys aren't trained enough, and there's, that kind of thing. And just let them run with, it's going to take away a little of the strategy, but, so be it. It's kind of interesting. I've been asked the questions, was it easier to manage or is it tougher managing the National League? So much going, people have said, well, there's so much more going on. But, I had some conversations with Jimmy Leland, a buddy of mine one time, who managed in both leagues for years, right? Mm-hmm. And he said he disagreed. He said it's tougher managing the American League because basically your whole decision is based on when do you take that pitcher out. He said a lot of times in the National League, the score dictates, well, you got to get this guy out of here, right? Because, it's kind of what we're talking about. But, it forces your hand. You got to do something here, so you take him out. Or in the American League, it comes down to, is this the right time to take this guy out? Has he got anything left? Is that kind of thing. So, I do. I like the DH better. I probably wouldn't have said that when I was a National League guy. But now, yeah.
It also speaks, John, it also speaks to what you talked about earlier about when the pitcher has to come and hit. And the momentum changes that occur in the game because they're not near as effective at the plate. It does change the offensive side of the game too.
Oh yeah, it does. You look at that Braves game yesterday, like when Milwaukee finally scores some runs, right? Now the pitcher's first and third, and he lays down a bunt. Now it's second and third, two outs, right? If you got a DH there or a regular position player, the game can be a little bit tougher. It puts, there's no free out here, and I kind of like that. That's kind of what I'm used to now. And I think the fans, majority of the fans would like that. I don't know. What do you guys feel? I know you're purist, but.
Well, I'm definitely a purist. I think pitchers should throw till their arms fall off, starting pitchers.
Should they bat though, Bob?
No, I'm okay with not hitting. And I tend to agree with Leland and with John that managing in the American League, if you really analyze it, the decisions that you make are decisions that are not made before the game starts. In other words, you know, in the National League, you've got a pitcher coming up with the bases loaded and one out. The last thing you're going to do, and you're in the fifth inning or sixth inning, it's almost invariable. You're gonna bring a pinch hitter up. Almost invariable, no matter who that pitcher is. That guy could be throwing a no-hitter. You're going to, you know, if the game is close, you're going to want to score a run. So that decision, as John said accurately, is made for you. It's not made by you. Where you make a pitching change in the American League, you're making it because of the pitcher. You're not making it because he's coming to the plate. You're making it based upon what you're seeing in him. So I think it's a really interesting point that I haven't heard before, that it's at least as hard or maybe harder to manage in the American League.
Hey John, what do you think of pitchers being forced to face three hitters? Because that changes a bit of the decision process too, doesn't it?
Yes, you know, I don't like that either. You know,
me neither.
I haven't experienced it because, you know, I think now you're messing with the strategy of the game. You know, now it's kind of like, you know, baseball is, you know, like you can't make contact with the catcher anymore. You can't break up double plays. It's like why are we messing with the game so much? That I mean. That's part of it. Does that make the game better? I don't think so. You know, but I think it ties the hand of the team. You know, well, you,
sure it does.
Yeah, he's got to face three. How am I going to, you know? And it does definitely takes away the specialist, you know, the guy lefty on lefty. Now you got to be able to, you know, so many more left-handed relievers now are better against, or much better against right-handers because more of them throw the change up, you know, it's not basically fastball slider that they used to just lock in on it left on left, you know, so maybe they're groomed for that a little bit better, but I think you're messing with the strategy a little bit too much there. You know, I mean, I think, you know, we try to get in the way of this game, you know, we try to screw up this game, you know, in the end it won't let you, you know, the baseball survives, but it's like, why don't we just leave it alone? Some things are pretty good, you know, and even if the game's a long game, you know, if you're in the stands or, you know, or you're home watching on TV and it gets a little bit long for you, turn it off or go home. You know, I mean, it's, we don't need to, I don't know.
Red Sox Astros, Astros in it for the fifth year, fifth consecutive postseason appearance. They're a really good team. And the Red Sox, I don't think, did anybody believe in the Red Sox all year long? I just kind of, you look at that roster and you say, well, it's kind of cobbled together. And I give them credit for getting to the postseason. You know, winning in the last weekend of the year to get in, and I give them credit for, you know, getting this far, but I don't see them matching up well against Houston. Do you?
Yeah, I think, well, Houston's got the best team. I think, you know, I mean, they've been that way for the last few years, you know, and then, but it's a different, it's a kind of a different look Boston Red Sox than we're used to, seeing, you know, with the, you know, they still got Bogarts and those guys, but, you know, the real, you know, big slugging type, big poppies and all those guys. So it's a little different makeup of a team. But you know, I mean, you know what, they're hot right now. You know, they're feeling good. So that, you know, knows how far that takes them. But I think, you know, Houston's got the advantage. But yeah, if you think about it, like what you just said, that, you know, Boston's, they're down that last game on that last Sunday against Washington. They come back and, you know, they don't win that game. You know, they got a playoff game, right? Guys, and you know what, they may not even have gotten in, you know, so, and now look at it. that's kind of the beauty of the sport, you know, and there any sport, so, but Houston's will be my pick.
Well, and I think we all probably agree in a series, whether it's 5-game or 7-game series, it's about starting pitching. You got to have the good starting pitching, and Houston's starting pitching is better than Boston's. I think we would all concede that. Now, does that mean they're Houston's going to win? Of course not. But that's the big advantage they have, don't you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, I just think they're an all around better team, you know, you know, they were always, you know, they boys 5 years in a row, they're getting to that. The fun. So yeah. What does that tell you, you know?
Yeah. Tells you something.
But I tell you what though, and you're a baseball lifer. So the stigma of the cheating for the Astros. Will it ever go away? And not necessarily for the fans, but for guys like you that have earned their living in the game of baseball, what does the Houston cheating scandal mean to you as a hangover over 3 or 4 years?
You know, John, I'm over it. You know, they're not the only ones out there, I'm sure, that were doing it, you know. You know, to take it to that extent, yeah, that's not the norm, you know. And hey, you know what? I don't like that. You know, if you can steal the guy at second base and relay him, all that, you know, it's our job on the other team to prevent you from doing that. But when you, technology, you know, who knows what you can get now with technology? That's, I think we're using that too much in the game anyway. And of course, that's what it's all about. So yeah, I don't like that. But you know what? That's me. You know, that's. To worry about that now, you know, it's sour grapes to me. And then when Arojo guys, Tapera came out the other day and was accusing him of it, and go, yeah, where's, you know, he's got to have some facts, doesn't he? I mean, he's got to have some proof before you go down that road again, I would think. And then they got pummeled. So, you know, that, to me, John, we're past that. They, regardless of what they're doing, they had a hell of a team, you know, arguably, yep. The best, you know.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
That's right. I will say this, I don't know if you guys remember, but we had a game, we took a lead in down in Houston, regular season game. Tapera was our closer at this time. It was towards the end of my stint there. And Bregman takes him deep to walk off in the ninth. We had, I think, a 1 or 2 run lead. And he's going for a save. Might have been a couple out. So I'm sure that's in the back of his mind too. You know, that was the year where they're beating the drum, you know, beating the garbage can. So I guarantee you that's kind of an after effect for old Tapera. You know?
Well, I'll tell you what, if anybody knows they're going to be cheating, Alex Cora will. So.
Yeah, that's kind of funny too, isn't it? With him coming back and now he faces the Astros.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, go to prison, man. Then you get reformed. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
They never.
Well, we have spent a fair bit of time talking about the season the Toronto Blue Jays had and the future of this franchise, because there are questions that have to be answered here. Maybe not exactly this offseason, but in the next couple of offseasons. And we want to address those with Gibby, too, and see what his thoughts are. We'll do that when we continue after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, John Gibbons, the former manager of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Hey, Bob, before we talk about the Jays, I have one more question for John about particularly the Giants and Dodgers. And that is the fact that Gabe Kapler is the manager of the Giants and probably knows the Dodgers better than he knows his own team. What kind of advantage does that give him?
You know what, John? I mean, that's a good question, a tough question to answer. You know, because yeah, he was the farm director over there.
Farm director, yeah.
Yeah, before he went to Philly, so he does know a lot of those guys. You know, I mean, maybe he might obviously be able to throw in some good insight. You know, on how you want to pitch these guys or that, you know, the hitters, that type of thing. All I know too, though, you know, he's got a good team. It's really. You know, what a great story out there in San Francisco to turn everything around like that. You know, I mean, they were good all those years when Bochy was there and, you know, they won 3. And then, you know, then they were just kind of, you know, nobody knew what to expect, but to do this. But, you know, they put that a great team together and they, you know, they're like we've been talking about earlier today, they got some great pitching, man. And that's, mm-hmm. that's going to get you there. But you also have to have some offense. So what kind of advantage, John, is that? I know I'm rambling. Does that give them? You know, I'm not sure at this point sure how much, because it's been a few years removed anyway, you know.
Yeah, I think it's nothing, because, you know, we're in an era now where we see guys sitting in the dugout looking at iPads and watching pitchers pitch. And the technology today allows you to have so much information on the guy you're about to face, whether you're a pitcher or whether you're a hitter. So, you know, what a guy did in the minors or what a manager saw when he or his farm director when he was looking at guys 3-5 years ago, I don't think it means that much anymore.
I'm just asking the question.
No, I get it. I'm trying to answer, like offer an opinion here. And I think Gibby probably agrees with me, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But you know, the pitcher's still got to go out and execute it. You know, and the hitter's got to, you know, he's got to be able to hit that thing. So
the Toronto Blue Jays had a pretty good year. Came as close as you can come without getting in, and have a bunch of young players, but they are a bunch of young players who in the next couple of years are going to get paid a lot of money. And I even opined that you may see a Blue Jay, if theoretically you could see a Blue Jay roster that's going to cost well over $200 million in order to put it on the field. And while we don't know whether Rodgers is going to be willing to do that, there are probably going to be some tough decisions to make. It's easy to look at a guy like Grichuk and say, well, we can afford to get rid of him so we can dangle him as trade bait, but he's a $10 million guy. Hernandez hit 300, hit 30-plus home runs, plays a decent, although not great, defensive outfield, but he's going to make $20-plus million. You know, and there are more decisions like that. Bichette's going to get paid. Guerrero's going to get paid. They probably will try and re-sign Semien, and that's a $25 million contract. When you add it all up, Gibby, a lot of money going to be going out the door if you want to try and keep this team together. How do you make the decisions as to who stays and who goes, given the economic scenario that faces every franchise?
Yeah, Bob, you know, it's tough. You know, as a coach and managers, we want everything. You know, we don't know.
Yeah, you want to keep everybody good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, we're not involved in the economics part of it. But I do know one thing, you know, to win, you got to pay money. You know what Tampa does. You know that's aberration. You know, I mean, you still want to attract star power because that puts people in the seat. But they proved in Toronto because I heard it for years. You know, if the team's in the hunt in September, those people will show up. And if you get in the postseason, they'll come out in droves, right? And sure enough, it finally happened, and it was right on. You know, and they have the money. You know, the people are gonna. I mean, you own one country, yeah. So you're gonna have to spend how much you can spend. You know, and I'm not smart enough to know that, but I do know this. You know, if you know when you're playing with the big boys, man, with the Yanks and the Red Sox, you know that division. You know, you have to pay. You know, but I have a hard time believing you're not making any money. You know, when that place sells out.
I get it. I get it. But as a manager, well, so let me phrase it this way. You got a pitcher in Ray who may win the Cy Young. You've got a guy in Semien who probably will finish top three in the MVP. Both of them are free agents. In the old school philosophy, pitching over hitting, pitching even over defense, starting pitching is the hardest thing to find, quality starting pitching. But I guess I have been convinced that Semien is the right guy to keep. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Bob, you know what? What's your alternative? Do you got another stud down there like that can replace him, can take his spot? You know,
I don't think so. Well,
in Ray's case, you know, Ray. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, this was a year it really came all together for him, right? Because he just kind of tried to put it all together for. So he doesn't have that track record that other than this year, right? If you want to blow up the bank account on. So I mean, you got to balance those things. But I think how can you replace these guys? Because you know, pitching, it is hard to find pitch. You know that. I mean,
Yeah.
So if you got one that you really like, and you can afford, it's not going to be ridiculous. I'd lean that way because you look at the offense. There's a lot of offense, you know, coming from that whole team right there, you know, up there. But you can't just throw nobody out there to replace him. I'd love guy, you know, because 25 home runs or whatever he hit, how many did he hit?
45.
Who, Semien?
Yeah.
Semien? Yeah, like 45, 46.
45.
That is tough to replace.
Yeah.
That shut down pitch, man, you know.
Well, hold on. Let's just clarify this. You are being asked by someone you have to keep Ray or Semien. You're going to side with the pitcher. You can only keep one of them.
Well, who's is anybody knocking on the door in the AAA, or have they got somebody to take Semien's spot?
No, I don't think
Pearson, who hasn't. You know, was the 100-mile-an-hour thrower who they loved, but who's been hurt and hasn't performed as well. He wound up in the bullpen at the end of this year. But he's one of those, you don't know, you know, we've seen enough of him to have concerns about whether he's going to wind up being anything or not.
Well, but I think in his spot now, I mean, the way he's been talked about, you know, and I'll be honest, I've never even seen him pitch in person, but I've heard great things about him. I think he's one of those guys you just need to throw out there, man. Throw him out there every fifth day for an extended period of time, find out what you got. You know,
well,
healthy. But you end up keeping, you got a spot for Simeon, you know?
Well, Simeon's the guy I keep. And I mean, here's the other thing, you know, 5 years ago, the story on Pearson was he threw it 100. He could hit 100 miles an hour on the gun, and they were even talking about potentially he could hit 105. And that was, you know, we all lived through an era where like 100 miles an hour, like you can't hit 100 mile an hour fastball.
Right.
Kelly last night in the Dodger game is throwing up all these overhand breaking balls, these curve balls, and then he winds up and fires one at 102.
Oh yeah, you know? Yeah. They all throw hard now.
Yeah, you
know? Yeah. No, I got you on that. You know, but the arm, sooner or later those arms got to blow. The arm's not supposed to throw 100 miles an hour, you know.
Well, okay. Talk to me about Nolan Ryan. Let's talk about our generation. Nolan, how many years did Nolan do it? He threw 300 innings a year, and he was even before the gun. So
and
we
played
don't
every
exactly
fourth day.
Know.
So he threw it through the barn door, didn't he?
Oh my God! Yeah,
and he threw. They timed Bob Feller with the motorcycle. Remember?
Yeah.
All I know is back in the early '80s, mid '80s, when I was trying to play. You know, you see a guy that threw 95 miles an hour. You go, wow. You know, everybody knew Nolan was the exception, and those, you know, there was a handful of them. But most of them were around 90 mile. You know, that was a good fastball. But I think they were pitchers more. You know, now I think they're throwers. But back then, you know, they could all throw two or three quality pitches. They had some finesse to them. Now they just rear back and throw as hard as they can. Most of them. So, yeah, it. But when you see that one guy, if you saw a guy throwing 100 miles an hour, you go, geez, what the hell? I think who was the guy that the number one pick by the Detroit Tigers probably in the late 80s? Never made. He threw 100 miles an hour, so he's like, this guy's the next coming, and he didn't even last, you know. But that's what they do now. But it also comes when we're talking about the game, how the game is so different that I don't like about it. These guys can only go one inning, you know, and it's like, you know, if you're going to max out on every pitch you throw, well, that's what's going to happen, you know.
Here's a question I've never asked, and this just kind of occurred to me. Did you ever face a guy when you were playing? Did you ever face a guy who threw a changeup?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. You know, and it was just the split was just coming on the scene. Remember Roger Craig? Roger Craig was, I think, the pitch coach in the Giants, and he started teaching that. I think he even gave that to Mike Scott. You know,
Bruce Sutter used to throw a nasty
Bruce,
one.
Bruce Sutter.
Yeah. I think Sutter was put it on the map, right?
Yep.
I mean, he was kind of a journeyman. He was on his way out of the game until he learned that, and then he becomes a Hall of Famer. You know, so yeah, you'd see, you saw more sinker sliders or in curve, but more curveballs than you see nowadays. You know, most of your starters, you'd see four pitches at them. You know, the guys playing with coming up in the minors, even the big leagues. You know, if you were a starter, you had damn near you always obviously had to have three pitches, but most of them would take it with four. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, I got two quick questions.
Yeah.
The first one is the Jays have a good defensive third baseman, but how important is it to get run production out of third base as a manager? That's my first question.
Who's the third baseman?
Espinal.
Espinal.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't hit the ball. According to our pal McCowan, he hits at key times, but he doesn't hit for numbers.
Well, he hit near 300. He was hurt and he was platooned early in the year, so he didn't have big number of at bats. No power whatsoever, Gibby. Good defense.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think you got to look at the whole makeup of your team. You know, if you got a power, who was it? With the year the Tigers beat the Padres in the World Series. Remember the third, you know, when Gibson hits that big home run, and I think the third baseman for Detroit was Tom Brookins or something. They might have ran a platoon.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, but they had bombers all the way around that lineup. But you know, you didn't. It was more of a hit. So you can't. I mean, you can't fill every position out. Probably economical.
Right. So we're talking and three catchers. You ever think about carrying three catchers? Would you rather have two or carry three?
A lot of teams do it. Used to do it in the National League, if I remember right. You know, because they. But back then, they you know, it wasn't like it was around the Moneyball era, maybe a little before that. All they wanted was offense at a catcher, so they'd throw that guy back there that couldn't catch, but he could hit a ton, right? You know, when I was coming around, you know that I mean, those guys were defenders. If you couldn't play defense, it didn't matter what you hit, you weren't going back behind the plate, you know. And then you have your Gary Carters and your Johnny Benches who did everything, right? But those are your superstars. But majority of the guys, they give you a little bit of here, maybe a little bit of offense, but that you had to play defense. You know, it was very rare that you have a catcher you put back there that was a stiff. You know, because the emphasis was on pitching. You know, your job was to get that guy through, and then build the rest of your team. You know, those guys got to be able to hit. You know, but what you remember, you know, you used to be you guys that you could almost put it. You know, you had your left fielder had to hit for power. Your left and right fielder said. Your center fielder had to be able to catch everything, right? Your shortstop, you know, guys up the middle, man, they had to be glove guys.
Yeah.
You know, then you have third baseman, first baseman could really swing it in your corner outfielders, right? That's how you built your team because you wanted defense up the middle and those guys. That's kind of, I think, the what everybody used to follow. Then it got into where everybody wanted offense at every position.
Well, in the old days, excuse me, if you had a third baseman hit 45 home runs, you didn't care if the second baseman only hit one.
Right.
You know, Blue Jays are exactly the opposite. They got a third baseman right now who hit one, and they got a second baseman who hit 45.
Well, that's kind of my point on all this.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Right.
We got to get out of here. You got things to do, I know. You look beautiful as always, Gibby.
Enjoy the river walk there. Enjoy the river walk.
Hey, Bob, I got one question, though, for you, man, because we were talking about purists a while ago, baseball purists. I know you're a purist, like in golf. Do you putt every putt out, or do you ever take a gimme, Bob?
If you'll give it to me, Gibby, I'll take it. If it's a 30-footer, scoop my ball up as fast as I can.
Boys. Hey, it's always a pleasure, man. You guys stay safe up there.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. There's John That's Gibbons.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
We'll be back after these messages. Well, I guess everybody knows by now we love Gibby. And can't have him on.
I want to try to serve a question and then sit back and listen. That's all I want to do.
I'm not going to sit here and say he was the best manager that the Blue Jays ever had. Not that he wasn't. But
Cito was better. Cito was a better manager.
Don't go there. But there's nobody that I've ever talked to in all my years that a manager that I enjoy talking to. And he's like this people. He is like this every single day.
Yep.
You go down to the ballpark and Gibby is always in a good mood and fun to talk to and always got a smile on his face. And I got that, you know, I got the great opportunity to throw out the first pitch once at a Blue Jay game. And you know who caught? Gibby.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget
To me, and I know we're old guys and we're get off my lawn guys. To me, John Gibbons is baseball.
100% right.
That's what I want baseball to be. I want John Gibbons, Pee Wee Reese, you know, Dizzy Dean. Have some fun, you know, laugh.
Well, we had some fun today, and we always do with Gibby. We'll come back with another episode.
We're talking soccer tomorrow.
Well, I'll take the day off. Is Sharman coming on?
Come on. Yeah, Sharman's coming on. Canada. Oh, him I like. Panama. Panama.
Him I like. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Because you get free pies. That's why. You get free pies.
The footy will be on, and we'll find something to talk to him about. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.